Colonel goes on, the voice of monopoly capitalism. If corporations are not actively engaged in helping to solve the problems created by Proposition 13, they may well be victims of a let's tax the rich movement, which we cannot stand, which is already echoing some places in some communities. Of course, even the Wall Street Journal relies on euphemisms once in a while, so one should read helping to solve the problems as not really meaning what it says, as meaning merely make sure you're in the middle of the local government process so that you can see to it that subversive, soak-the-rich propaganda, which some politicians might feel obliged or pressured to do by their middle-class voters to utter, doesn't get past the stage of talking or rhetoric. The Wall Street Journal services to its readers are not confined to such practical advice. However, businessmen also need their ideology and their myths, if not always for themselves, at least as arguments to pass on to the more naive. A master at this trade is Irving Kristol, K-R-I-S-T-O-L, a member of the Wall Street Journal's board of contributors, whose fascist reactionary words of wisdom range from comments on the inherent unfairness of all schemes that promote equality for the working class, and particularly equality for blacks and Indians and Asians, to celebrations of private profit as representing the closest thing to the heavenly ideal that Jesus represented as the King of Kings to be found on this earth. Clearly a philosopher to be reckoned with. Proposition 13 and such measures like it now being passed due to the right-wing, neo-fascist, racist mood of the U.S. public offers an opportunity to see the crystal mind of war at work. The style is set up a trick argument. The purpose is to set up a trick argument. Since the charge is made that the tax cuts mandated by such propositions as 13 will particularly injure the poor, Kristol responds with the following linguistic sleight of hand. To begin with, he says, it is ridiculous to talk as if all government services were a primary benefit to the poor. Of course, this is a statement with which no Marxist-Leninist or socialist would disagree, because it never gets to the poor. It gets to the bureaucrats. But Kristol has something else in mind. Summer schools, for instance, now closed in California and other states where Proposition 13 was passed, may be useful to some poor kids, but they are no less useful to children of the middle class. And that's what they're worried about, said the Wall Street Journal. Very true, except that as one of Kristol's more candid confreres, James Burnham, writing in the right-wing National Review, points out, among the immediate beneficiaries of Proposition 13 in California were the owners of private summer camps, who reported applications up as much as 600% over last year. Naturally, our instincts prompt the guess that those flooding California and Oregon private summer camps, being that this tax cut has come about, were not children of the poor, because they can't afford it, who suddenly found themselves without summer school, but they're the children of the middle class, the petty bourgeoisie. But Kristol is hardly done. If you want to know who benefits from summer schools, they are beyond all doubt profitable to middle-class teachers. In fact, he adds, there are previous few social programs that do not massively benefit middle-class professionals of all kinds. So what's all the fuss about, he says. So it shows that monopoly capitalists don't care about teachers or psychologists or doctors that are connected with the school systems even. Why the middle-class petty bourgeoisie can't see this, I do not know. Besides, argues Kristol of the Wall Street Journal, there are far fewer truly poor people in this country than the conventional statistics suggest, which is an outright lie. To prove the inadequacy of conventional views, which would measure poverty by income, would you believe that the Wall Street Journal cites the case of a couple of married graduate students whose nominal income at the moment might only be $4,000, which is not enough to feed a family. It's beneath the poverty level, even according to the U.S. government. But who was paying for their graduate school, the Wall Street Journal does not bother to say, because obviously they couldn't pay for college, which now costs $6,000 a year per person, and still live on $4,000. Are they poor? those graduate students on $4,000 a year? He asks, considering their prospects. Ergo, don't jump to conclusion next time you hear that a family is trying to get by on $4,000 a year, which they can't in U.S. society. On the other hand, you might think that a household with an income of $30,000 or $40,000 a year as a result of husband and wife both working is affluent. You couldn't be more wrong. There are taxes to be paid, mortgage payments to make, two cars to support, and perhaps a child or two or three who is going or will soon go to college. Even the Wall Street Journal admits that those making $30,000 to $40,000 can't make it. Very contradictory. Stupefying, is it not? Of course it isn't given to the rest of us humdrum mortals who begun to learn about socialism to live in a world peopled with happy-go-lucky $4,000 a year graduate students. Class families who can barely make ends meet on, if they're in the middle class, even on their annual $40,000 take-home pay. But who is to say that the Wall Street's world is less typical than our own? Unless one should unfairly charge the Wall Street Journal with a lack of compassion for those whose lives are genuinely precarious, even slowly starving, people in the $30,000 bracket not able to afford meats, consider this comment. The welfare population will be but minimally affected by the such measures as Proposition 13 is now being passed throughout the nation, suffering only the loss of cost of living increases to welfare rates that are the nation's highest, and a general reduction of the already too high payments that welfare families receive. How can they say that but with tongue-in-cheek when welfare is not even now able to maintain a family? It's the use of the words only in this last sentence in the Wall Street Journal that clinches the case for showing that Wall Street Journal is all cold heart. Well, one should go on almost infinitely citing examples of the wondrous passions of finance capital, monopoly capitalist news periodical Wall Street Journal. Hardly a day passes without a similar gem. Were the left socialists to set out to publish the most damning of what it deemed to be the secret thoughts of the monopoly corporate industrial military class wealth that owns the country, it would still be hard pressed to improve on any given issue of the Wall Street Journal. May it publish for as long as monopoly capital rules, which seems to be a long time in USA, at least until nuclear war comes and destroys most of the working class. Now, that's very interesting how the Wall Street Journal is so crass and openly admits in the newspaper what it's doing to working class people. We shall discuss Peru now. It's close to us. The Peruvian left seeks unity after the elections. The Peruvian socialists are talking unity in the wake of spectacular successes in their last July 18th Constitutional Assembly elections and in the midst of a militant three-month-old teacher strike. Under serious discussions is the possible formation of a front, Unico de la Revolucion, Unitarian Front of the Revolution, which could conceivably bring together dozens of Marxist-Leninist, Trotskyist, and even social democratic organizations. Socialist parties and the coalitions won nearly 40% of the vote in spite of vicious repressions of their labor organization, suppression of their press, and the control of the regular press by the monopoly capitalists, and arrest or deportation of thousands of their leaders just prior to the elections. More than half of the vote, 20%, went to the two principal fronts, UDP and FOECP, which are openly led by Marxist-Leninists and Trotskyites. By contrast, the pro-Moscow Peruvian Communist Party, PCPU, which lost much of its worker and student cadre because of old guard mentality of the Communist Party in Peru, in a split 6 months ago, received only 6%. Hugo Blanco, the charismatic Trotskyist and internationalist, as you know, the major enemies of socialism, though, are revisionism, anarchy, social democracy, and Trotskyism, because generally Trotskyists don't have a plan. They're too international minded. They know what they're against, but they don't have solutions or programs to implement the problem. But this Hugo Blanco, a former peasant leader, was the biggest leftist vote getter, helping FOCEP win over 11%. FOCEP put forward its call for socialist revolution in a more rebellious and radical fashion, while the UDP emphasized a broader and more coherent program. Thus, in the present context of the radicalization of the Peruvian working class masses in the midst of economic depression caused by U.S. capitalism and political crisis, some observers see FOCEP as having received a larger vote of protest, while the UDP won a smaller but more organized militant and cadre vote. However, Blanco is famous, as he is throughout Peru and the world, for his leadership of the peasant insurrections of the early 1960s, rejects a thesis that his vote represents simply his popularity among the poor, or just a protest against austerity and military dictatorship. I know that people did not vote for me because of romanticism or illusions. I think that the popular vote expresses a great sentiment for a workers' government and for socialism. Let's face it, the UDP had much more organization, many more cadre and propaganda apparatus than FOCEP. Nevertheless, you see the results. The masses are more radical in Peru and look for socialism, Blanco said in the interview. FOCEP and UDP each contains both Marxist-Leninist and Trotskyist organizations. The central obstacle to their unification? The past has reportedly been the opposition of Blanco and others to including social democrats in the United Front. Blanco's party rejects any alliance with what he terms the so-called progressive bourgeoisie, that is, those populist military officers and sectors of the petty bourgeoisie which formerly supported the military regime and have now formed the Partido Socialista Revolucionario, PSR. Under intense popular pressure, the military regime of General Francisco Morales Bermudez declared an amnesty on July 30, which will permit Blanco and other exile leaders to return to Peru immediately. Meanwhile, 120,000 public school teachers have strengthened their nationwide strike in Peru, now entering its third month. 3 million primary and secondary students are affected, many of them joining with the strikers in daily street clashes with the military and police. It was a miracle that the left won with military dictatorship in control. The teacher struggle has become the focus of popular opposition to the regime and may well culminate in yet another paralysis of the entire country. The government has issued arrest warrants for all officials of the teachers' union, SUTEP, accusing them of being totalitarian and ultra-left Marxists who are waging a subversive political strike. Nonetheless, Peru at this point has not been retaken over by the military, whereas in Bolivia, where the left won, the military, even admitting it was a fraudulent election, finally had to come back and take control, although there's still people striking, even though it means imprisonment without trial or death. We're so glad for this kind of courage of the people to fight on. To fight on, indeed, they are. We are, I think, about to the end of the news. I can't think of anything else. Beloved Chicoté, the Guinea-Bissau Prime Minister of the Marxist state, died at 39 years of age. He was killed in an auto accident, perhaps engineered, it is thought, by the CIA in the small West African nation. Look it up on your map. Chico, Chicoté, as he was affectionately called by the people of his country, was born in Tucchude, T-U-C-H-U-D-E, in 1939. In 1960, he joined the African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde and served as a dedicated party socialist militant until his death. From 1960 to 62, Mendez was as they call him Chico, the man that was killed, was a political commissar in neighboring Guinea, Conakry. When the PAIGC launched its armed struggle against Portuguese colonialism in 1962, he was a party activist in the Bafata region, which was one of the first areas liberated by the socialists from Portuguese colonial rule by armed struggle. In 1963, he was appointed political military leader for the entire northern region and became a member of the Political Socialist Bureau, the party's bureau, in 1964. In 1965, he became a member of the War Council, and from 1967 to 1970, he was responsible for ideological work in the Political Commission and on the Central Committee. It was under his leadership that 1,000 mercenaries hired by U.S. imperialism and her lackeys, white mercenaries, were destroyed and driven out after they were parachuted to do subversion in that lovely country of Guinea-Bissau. In 1970, he assumed nationwide responsibilities for logistics of the War Council and became a member of the Executive Committee. When Guinea-Bissau, GUINEA-BISSAU, proclaimed its independence in 1973, he was elected Prime Minister and President of the National Socialist Commission. This man, Say Newsman, was a warm, jovial man. Early in the morning of November 7, 1973, shortly after crossing an unmarked border into Guinea-Bissau with socialist militants, Chico met us near the border with a detachment of socialist guerrillas, activists, liberation forces, and members of the local population. He was powerfully built, with the hands of a person who loved work and the eyes of a man who loved children. In fact, our fondest memories of him are of the stops we made in villages during our long march through the bush. The children literally came running to him with squeals of delight, shouting his name, Chicote, Chicote. Like most social revolutionaries, Mendez Chicote was motivated by a great love, not only for children, but also for all of humanity and socialism. Chico Mendez and others like him in the PAIGC exemplified the quiet confidence of their people. They were able to endure severe difficulties and unimaginable hardships because of their vision and their belief in the possibility of building a better socialist world. And to think some of us complain when we have so much, that's why you should feel guilt that we help put paid on men like him and cause the death of many, many millions of black children and Asian children, 2 million people alone in Indonesia, and we have everything we need, and they endured eating bark from the trees. When we learned of his death, we thought back to our first meeting, the long discussions about what was happening in the world and what would be done in the new Guinea-Bissau under socialism. In our last meeting, when the National Assembly had met for the first time in the recently liberated capital city of Bissau, B-I-S-S-A-U. One cannot understand the life of a Francisco Mendes, or affectionately called Chicote, without understanding the society and conditions he sprang from. Before the government, that's still socialist, the capitalists did not succeed in taking over Guinea-Bissau with his death. The government launched its revolution. There were only 4 doctors before they launched their revolution in that colonial nation held down by the U.S. and its lackey fascist Portugal before its revolution. Only 4 doctors in the entire country, which had a population of 600,000 people. Poverty, illiteracy, and disease were the people's only birthright under the colonialism of the Europeans and USA. No one could read or write. For Mendez or Chicote and his comrades, the words socialist revolution had a real meaning based upon the concrete realities of their everyday existence. Theirs was not an intellectual or theoretical exercise. He will be greatly missed, this giant of a man, and he will be mourned. However, as in the case of the late Amilcar Cabral, founder and secretary general of the ruling socialist government, PAIGC, in Guinea-Bissau, his legacy is a nation full of young Chicotes, in spite of our tax dollars trying to murder them. God, 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 think, no doctors and all, better than 3/4 of the population was starving before his government took over in Guinea-Bissau and drove out the European, U.S. corporations by armed struggle. This is important news. We've been giving you more of it than usual, hoping that you will take a look at what's happening cuts loom over the general hospitals of United States. One example is given, Chicago's Cook County General Hospital, now, due to the tax cuts, has a severe reduction in patient care services as a way to overcome a $7 million budget cut. It is the only public hospital in the city that offers any kind of fair medical care and at somewhat lower rates than private hospitals, still even above the ability of the poor to pay. The Cook County Health and Hospitals Governing Commission, the board that runs the hospital, recently fired 100 hospital employees, mostly minorities, of course, black and brown, Indian, and suggested voluntary employee pay cuts as one way to avoid laying off over 1,000 more of its 8,200 employees. The governing commission is also investigating other cost-cutting measures, including no more prescription drugs will be given, no drugs for any welfare patients, no more dialysis for chronically ill kidney patients, even if they have money to pay, because it's costly. Cutting out employees' health services, no insurance for employees, closing the school of nursing to train nurses badly needed, particularly in the poor cities of USA. Closing the pediatric dental school. The whole idea of cutbacks is shocking, said Harold Quigley, head of the committee to defend Cook County Hospital. A group of concerned doctors, nurses, hospital aides, and community residents. The loss will be irreversible, irretrievable. This will deepen health deprivations that already exist. People will not get medical care at all. And he said this is the tragedy that this is happening with every general hospital in every city in the United States. It recently revealed that the hospital has paid a consultant $625,000 to tell them how to save money. That's the hypocrisy of capitalism. A big capitalist consulting firm gets $625,000 to tell them how to save money by putting burdens on the working class. This seems to be the major news. I can't think of anything else that would be particularly helpful. There is more news constantly of black people being killed by rioters, police, mob killings, and castrations that go on all the time. Now campaigns of hysteria whipped up also against the homosexual as well as the black and Indian and Asian community. This continues to plague the nation. The last one I remember is a black woman raped by 7 men in Seattle, and then her breasts were cut half off when the rape was finished. No one had any clues, it said, to the crime, though it was in a neighborhood traveled by many people. Passerbys did nothing to help, and this happened open daylight. She was dragged into an alley, raped, mutilated, one black mother with 4 children. This is typical of the racism, I'm telling you. No matter what the government wants to do, the so-called charade of harmony and equality and human rights, the people are filled with race hate, and I demand that you study this tape, and I want everyone that has ever been on the floor for going back to have a special class in which they listen to it very closely and have a teacher help them understand it very, very thoroughly. Much love to you. 4 o'clock, there shall be television for the children from 4 to 6 with interpreters. I demand with interpreters. Do you hear me? With interpreters. Then at 6, our musical program of our beautiful musicians, songsters, Moms Mabley, that people like Norman would enjoy. I'd like for him to see some of our talent, though we can't possibly display it all. And then after that, there will be television selections. I think the movie Parallax View must be seen by all. I urge all of you to take a look at it. But I think tonight, The State of Siege, a fascinating movie with drama and reality, truth, will be the movie of the night on the televisions, State of Siege. Then later, if you care, you that have come since seeing the golden years that show the horrible suffering of all nation's poor people, USA. I mean, all of the old, be they business people, they say their lives are worse than death. A black mother with her leg cut off, no one to take care of her grandchild while she went to the hospital and her legs were removed. No one to take care of her child when she came home. He was starving to death, laying lifeless nearly. 70 years of age, no one to take over the grandchild. He'll be put in an institution where they're given no special treatment, not even enough to eat anymore with all the tax cuts. You see, white businessman, so alone in a hotel, dirty old hotel room, having to climb 6 flights, 70 some, or 68 steps, and he's crippled with arthritis. You have to watch them as they look behind their shoulders, so fearful they'll be mugged for the few dollars they have, afraid to cash their checks, what little they have, all of them living in dumps, even though some of them, as you see, own businesses. It's white, black, Asian, Indian, all of them. What happened to the plight of our old is horrifying in USA. The loneliness, they even say that, please to the cameraman to talk to them, because they have no one that'll talk to them in the nursing home, even the one that was in a nursing home. No one talked to them, no one changed their beds, leave them in bed sores, even put on their charts like Marcelin told you, to do nothing to keep them alive. Soon it'll be kill them off like the doctor did, killing 5 patients off with injections so he could have the beds for his hospital that he owned for rich paying guests. We need to know that. We need to know the Battle of Algiers, which gives us the important message of how you have to discipline yourself, as our Prime Minister is saying here, to organize ourselves, clean up corruption and self-indulgence. You see, even the children making the drunks behave, even beating them to get them to their senses, and the elimination of the criminal element when they will not repent and reform. And then you go on to watch how they organize so brilliantly, and how they withstand all kinds of pressures in a racist society where they're not allowed to go into the white sector in Algiers, which has been a haven for many black people who've had to flee the country to avoid being in the gas chamber or life imprisonment. Then you need to look very, very closely at Z, where democracy was corrupted, even a better form of democracy than USA, and how it was taken over, and how the police do things and the press lies and all the intrigue. And when the press brought out a little of it, too much, fortunately at Watergate, for the capitalists, not too much got out so they could go on with their pretense. But when it got out there, Watergate, you saw the bloody military dictatorship come over the land and kill off the people that had dared to ask questions, throw them out of 7-floor buildings, crush them in planned car accidents, throw them off to drown, and other forms of bestial, inhumane tortures in prison. Those are some of the things that are required, that you have those films. You should know about Malcolm and see how futile it is in USA, how the system destroyed him when he was talking for the people to unite against racist oppression and to help our brothers and sisters in Africa to get out from under the boot of colonialism. We must know all of this and know that this is vital. Recreation is important, and we'll begin at 4 to 6 with interpreter. Try to have something of meat and substance once in a while other than just the comedies. That's also important. You children will watch things with substance, and you can interpret them to the children. They need to develop feeling. They have recreation, treats, and joy, and should have a lighthearted comedy too, but something heavy once in a while. Then they have the light comedy and music of our band and orchestra and our comedians, which will come on at about, they begin at 6 o'clock, and then they'll be through by 8, and we'll have the wonderful movie State of Siege. I want all to see that too, to understand it. It really happened, but it has tremendous drama. Thank you, and I love you very much. Obviously, to talk to you with such a high temperature, you could know I care about giving you knowledge. Those who love you want to give you information. Even Abraham Lincoln said, the people cannot be free unless you give them the facts. unless you give them knowledge, and I have given you the facts, and the truth will make you free. Thank you, and I love you so much. Continue working around your homes, planning where you can. You could do that while you're listening to the news. Do little things, cleaning up, because we have guests coming. See that there's nothing sitting out on the porches, shoes not deteriorating. See that the park areas are cleaned up, the benches properly set. And please help me. I've had to go around picking up scrap pieces of paper where people just cut them up in little pieces on. Attention. We want to keep a clean community so that we can have more money to help with our beautiful Guyanese neighbors. It is so costly, our free medical clinic. So costly, our doctors and medical services and the medical supplies, to give them away free. You alone, you will not have as much recreation, nor will you have as much medical care unless you learn how to save and come up with creative ideas, like I just mentioned with Comrade Grubbs, who found a way to save our cutlasses. We're having improper filing, and I want the administrators to implement that training immediately. It could cut the cost at least by one-third. And then the making of those janitorial brushes, brooms, and the domestic brooms, which could help immensely, because Guyana, our beloved Guyana, sells brooms abroad. And we need to get on with the cup making through pottery making, you know. All these resources available. Use your time. The worst thing, Guyana said, our Prime Minister said, that we have to deal with is that people will not work as much for the collective, even though they get more benefits than they would for their own individual selfish interest. So let's be more interested in in work for the liberation of our people who do require it, and our beautiful neighbors who we send in, Guyanese neighbors from Port Kaituma and Matthews Ridge. We sent a lady in this week who would have died of cancer if we hadn't caught it in time. We saved another one, Guyanese lady, life, who came with her baby, had a good, healthy baby, but she was in shock and her heart was in fibrillation, stopping. She would have died. Not to mention the miracle that came when I came in and a little baby, a great seed that was blocking the breathing, came out of that lovely Fraser family, who is the railway engineer. And many, many children have been saved and adopted that have been taken in. And we have many Guyanese with us and have had them for weeks at a time while they recuperate. We want to be able to be of service to the entire Northwest region and bring our people to freedom before it's too late in the racist environment in which they live. So I thank you for your assistance in picking up all things. Don't waste paper. Use both sides. Please be careful to save. Don't brush by the blackboards, because it's a lot of work that the librarian puts into it. Then you make it impossible for people to read. So study well. For those that get special bonuses, remember, for those that do well, and many, many in the community are doing excellent, an excellent plus. You get special bonuses of time off and other rewards, travel, special candies, pastries, so forth and so on. Thank you very much. Children's program, movies, begin at 4, the band and entertainment at 6. Much love. And the movie then, a beautiful movie, State of Siege, at about 8. Attention, 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 attention. All people, please stop for the moment. We have to have every typewriter privately stop being used regularly, so you have a typewriter that you use for your own note-taking purpose. We need them desperately to prepare for this author and Hollywood, to produce the Hollywood films, author of Executive Action and Parallax View. We must, and we must have all typewriters repaired that are in a state of disrepair, and then we won't have enough. This is an emergency request. There is an important news bulletin coming from Africa. The British Broadcasting Company observes and states, in spite of Britain being in the alliance of NATO, U.S. imperialism. The statement is, Britain and United States is getting ready for some sort of military effort in Africa. They have had a total failure in suppressing the struggle of the Zimbabwean people. Right now, mercenaries are being secreted in to Rhodesia or Zimbabwe. It is 97% under the control of the rightful government, the people, the Liberation, Zimbabwean Patriotic Liberation Front. Britain says it's obvious that they will have to do something. 350 U.S. multinational corporations have interest there. 400 British multinational corporations, U.S. and British combined. 400 West German, the capitalist portion of West Germany, that is claimed to be the inheritor of Hitler's fascist Third Reich. $230.5 million is going out of there every 6 months to the West. They are now reporting that Cessna aircraft, Mirage bombers, and helicopters, U.S. made, are being used against the Patriotic Front, and there are reports that there are the presence of USA military aides in the same way that they began the conflict in Vietnam. This is foolhardy. They will not possibly succeed, even though, according to the BBC, British Parliament has approved the present policy, and USA has also approved the fascist policy. In spite of British resistance, and a number who spoke out, including its foreign secretary, Dr. Owen, who said that it was foolhardy to support a government obviously racist, obviously unrepresentative of the people, obviously dictatorial, as Ian Smith is of Rhodesia, and totally in disfavor with Africa. Dr. Owen, Foreign Secretary of Britain, said that we would lose Africa's respect and alliance totally because the Organization for African Unity voted a total indictment of Rhodesia and a demand for liberation from the dreaded regime, illegal regime of Ian Smith, that's now being supported by military direct aid and economic aid from USA and Britain since last week when USA lifted its ban in Congress, both the House and the Senate. In Belgrade, Yugoslavia, of course, it was decided that Havana will be, for the first time, the host for all non-aligned nations and make plans for it from 1979 to 1982 when it is taking place. Somalia and the Egyptian attempts to invade Eritrea have failed. Ethiopians have driven them out with Soviet and Cuban aid. Cambodia, nationalistic, though some form of domestic communism, but highly prejudiced, carrying much ethnic prejudices against other people, tried to obstruct the Vietnamese in their shipping, and it has failed. Cambodia also has been driven back from Vietnamese borders. Creation of an alliance of reactionary obstructionist tactics made in attempts to undermine the non-aligned movement and Vietnam, who is exercising strong influence in Southeast Asia because of its aid and its model type of socialist government, says Radio Moscow. The Havana Youth Festival, 145 countries are now participating. The delegates thank Cuba for an organization that for them and preparations and for the beauty of recreation, entertainment, education as they had never had before in any of the other youth festivals that have all occurred in the socialist world in Europe. They assured solidarity with Cuba's demand to free Cuba from the USA economic blockade and the return of Guantanamo base to the Cuban people. They made other pledges, resolutions for the independence of Africa, the dismantling an overthrow of the Union of South Africa's white racist apartheid government and Rhodesia's apartheid fascist government that doesn't even represent but 3% of the people. Cooperation, double and stable. Ovation, 30 minutes long, was given to the Cuban Communist Party leader, Dr. Fidel Castro. A strong and staunch stand was taken in anti-imperialist solidarity by the 145 youth delegations present from various 145 nations of the world. In Africa, West actually started already to recolonize Africa, says Radio Moscow. And the Tanzanian paper headlines this, even though they've had to fight IMF demands and presence of still multinational corporations because all their land is not nationalized as it has been here in Guyana, says that U.S. imperialists and her likes are trying to destabilize in Rhodesia, in Eritrea, in South Africa, and Angola. This is according to Radio Moscow. Radio Moscow said that the Organization for African Unity, African independent nations will not tolerate it, and that the USSR and Cuba will continue to pledge support to any nation threatened, its sovereignty threatened. This is an emergency news bulletin that the USA and Britain have stepped up military aid and placing mercenaries and even military aides that they call aides, which are nothing but U.S. troops, contingents of the Green Beret who are so cruel, have been placed on the soil of Rhodesia to hold up that tottering regime. They thought they could hold it up by equipping it with arms alone, but now it takes the presence of men, just like Vietnam, because Vietnam, South Vietnam, never was once wanted to be separated from North Vietnam, as you saw in Hearts and Minds, which must be seen by all. Thus ends the news bulletin, and they shall continue. You can go on back to your music, but they will continue with the rest of the news for those that are listening that wanted it played and asked for it to be played. Enjoy the music and entertainment, followed by the movie at just about 8 o'clock. Thank you so much. I know. Police Association Chairman Patrick Baxter calls for more humanizing of police work, more understanding of the various elements of society in carrying out the duties of law enforcement. Jamaica. Entering into, in this last few hours, they have appeared to be going bankrupt. But the United Soviet Socialist Republics have entered into a trade agreement with them, increasing enormous supplies of fish, which may, according to GBS, save that troubled socialist economy. That this time, it'll be an imbalance. The Soviets will be practically giving them aid. Later, they will look to the Jamaican country for pimentos and citrus. Belgrade Agreement is coming to a wind-up. Foreign Minister Rashida Jackson has stressed solidarity in a world of swift changes. The Third World must ally itself, he said, against being dominated by the major capitalist powers. Must secure accord amongst ourselves. Rashida Jackson defended the role of Cuba as a non-aligned nation because of resolutions by Somalia and Cambodia to try to put Cuba out of the non-aligned conference. Mozambique, white forces from Rhodesia have again raided villages, killing several women and children, according to the Guyana Broadcasting Studios, that decry this merciless actions of the Ian Smith regime that has now been bolstered by USA lifting their ban on military aid, which is criminal, and the British government. Also, the mood has changed after the lie that was told that supposedly the Patriotic Front had killed 14 white missionaries. But even the Voice of America carried a report of Andrew Young, his investigation of some weeks ago, again, that was told that supposedly the Patriotic Front had killed 14 white missionaries. But even the Voice of America carried a report of Andrew Young, his investigation of some weeks ago, again, in which he proved clearly that it was not, he did not go so far as to say it was the CIA, as the Soviet Union alleges, but Andrew Young, the black ambassador to the United Nations, who presently is facing hearings on his impeachment, stated unequivocally and clearly that the investigation of his agency, of his U.S. agency, has found that it was Eon Smith that murdered the 14. The Soviet says, yes, with CIA aid, Eon Smith, the dictator of Rhodesia, the white racist who has ruled illegally for 11 years, did that. This is, as far as I can see, generalizations and the best of the news. I can't see anything else that is of any particular value to mention now. There are a lot of little details. This is all bonus. Those who get it, fine, and will appreciate it, fine. If you can pass it, it gets extra bonus time, things that you want in the community, because we want to reward knowledge. We want to praise people who achieve in every area. By the way, those who are making those polls, getting those polls in, Stephen and Ronnie the Dennis lad and others, this is amazing that you have not only kept up the pace but excelled it. Someone gave me this note, and I'm very appreciative of that kind of progress. Because indeed, if we don't build the roads, if we don't feed ourselves, our knowledge will all be in vain. But it's also fascinating to see that Stevens Group have their classes and do well. Dennis Ladd has done well in his understanding, though he was educationally deprived. He has done very well in his understanding of the news. He's got a pretty good concept of the world as it is. Today, we'll give you some background on Canada, who is seeking a more independent course of action. By the way, I'd like to say, people have to evolve to our Georgetown headquarters. One woman whose life we saved, it's in one of our units now, that was brought in three days ago, who's been with us for 3 days, from Fort Kaituma, has to go in. We have to have those to accompany her. We have others that will be going in, of our beautiful Guyanese neighbors. And we're going to have total willingness to share from your department. Now, Comrade Grubbs, the principal, has been the most willing to share. And education is vital to all. But I get, every time I want to change people, and people have to have the knowledge that they're going to be able to be changed. They don't like to be in the city. They want to be out here, in the beauty of Jonestown. They don't like serving in the headquarters. But in order to give them a 6 weeks period, I have to have alternates. And I get red flags from some departments all the time. And someone wanted me to put Cardell Neal. I cannot and will not. I made a request. I said the slate that I wanted. Now, unless you can come up with some suggestion that will not break into the educational department, I will not accept it. The administrators cannot accept it because I don't interfere. I'm not the government here. But it is ridiculous. 12 teachers have been taken for project works in medicine, and we need medicine. But also, it seems that always we turn to agriculture. Take an agricultural worker. Let me tell you, agricultural workers have to be highly qualified, skilled, the most intelligent people. If we don't eat, there'll be no bodies to take care of. If we don't produce enough food that we can take care of ourselves, we'll have no medical care to give to our beautiful neighbors and this excellent medicine that we provide to everyone, the many lives that were saved. A poor Kaituma baby that was born beautifully, healthily last week. A woman who would have died 2 days ago from the port. All the marvelous miracles of medicine would not be able to be achieved without agricultural assistance. By the same token, we have to be educated. So I'm afraid that we're going to have to break in to some departments that have considered themselves resistant to any have any request at all for your person to revolve. I don't know what we're going to do about this. You have to work it out. But don't come back with a suggestion to me that it will be Cardell Neal. The public school system cannot afford any more right now. And that must remain that way. I'm sorry to have to say that, but it must remain that way. So I put it in your hands. We have to know tomorrow, and there have to be people to revolve, because our word is our word. 6 weeks, and there are a number of people that have to come out tomorrow, and that means people going in. Canada. Canada forms the northern half of the North American continent, stretching from the Atlantic to the Pacific, flanked by huge islands on either coast, and sharing a 3,897-mile southern border with the USA. Canada also shares a border with the USA in Alaska that was taken from the Soviet Union before it became a communist power. It was bought for $7 million from the Tsar. Alaska, that is. The St. Lawrence River Valley was the first part of the area to be explored by Europeans through the efforts of Samuel D. Champlain. The first permanent settlement in Canada was founded in 1608 at Quebec on the banks of the Great River. Quebec is primarily French. They want their independence. They are very pro-Third World. They want to separate from Canada. And they have the most progressive province in the Canadian Union. The words Canada comes from the Iroquois Indians, Iroquois, from Kanata, or Canada, Kanata, or Kanada, meaning a group of huts. The French had a more grandiose name for the colony, New France. Voltaire was not deceived. A few acres of snow, he called it derisively, where the people will be exploited by the rich of Europe in the name of Christianity. That's often been the case everywhere. In 1760, by which time there were 60,000 French settlers in St. Lawrence Valley area, Britain, by conquest, by force of arms, conquered Canada. So the French had the first claim. That's probably why Quebec feels so strongly its right to independence, and speaking French as it does, is demanding to be a separate state, a separate nation. The new leaders were content to leave the French undisturbed, preoccupied as they were with the rebellious colonies to the south. During the American Revolution, 40,000 to 60,000 loyalist people supporting the British Empire moved to Canada, especially to the upper St. Lawrence region in Ontario, confirming British control. But it brought about the independence of America, so America could build its own independent form of capitalism. Thereafter, the independent nation of Canada evolved as a result of a mostly peaceful evolutionary process of political integration. In 1867, the British Parliament passed the British North American Act, providing the provinces of Canada, Quebec, Ontario, Nova Scotia, and New Brunswick shall form one dominion under the name of Canada. Other British North American territories were included as provinces in the Dominion later. Manitoba, 1870. British Columbia, 1871. Prince Edward Island, 1873. Alberta and Saskatchewan, 1905. Newfoundland, 1949. By 1931, when the British passed the Statute of Westminster, Canada, by that time, was an independent nation, a voluntary partner in the Commonwealth of Nations. Size, 3,851,809 square miles. Lots of miles. Second largest nation in the world. A country so vast that air mapping still discovers new northern frontiers. Population, 23 million. At first it would seem that they're in good stead, but much of the land is not fertile, not usable for creating food, which is the most important thing that beautiful Guyana has, the ability to make all the food that its people and many outside of its country can use by export. British descent formed 44% of the 23 million. French, 27%. Other Europeans, 24%. Asians, Indians, Eskimos, and others are 5%, and they don't fare well there. There's a lot of racism developing there. Many have moved out because of arson against their homes, for instance, in Ontario. Lots and lots of racism. 45.5% are Roman Catholic, 20.1% are the United Church of Canada, which is a merger of Methodist, Congregationalist, and Presbyterians. 13.2% are the Church of England, Anglican or Episcopalian. Church of England, as you know, King Henry formed because the Roman Catholic Church would not approve of him taking on another wife. And so he broke away and became the head of a church for his own selfish purposes. 4.5% are Presbyterian that refused to merge. 3.6% are Lutheran. 3.3% are Baptist. 9.6% are atheist or other small sects. Who rules? The head of state is Queen Elizabeth II. She told a Toronto audience on June 23rd last year, "I want the crown to be seen as a symbol." This is a statement of the reality of the situation. The Queen is represented by Julius Leger, L-E-G-E-R, Governor General, who took office in January 1974, appointed by the Prime Minister, who is Prime Minister Trudeau, who is really the head of the government. There's also a Parliament consisting of a Senate and a House of Commons. But who really rules Canada? A hot question in Canadian politics. That's why they're trying to get a more independent course. They want to be a part of the European common market. They're taking more independent stands against USA over fishing rights and even over their export of food now and assistance, the $7 million loan just today to Guyana. Warnings have been sounded since the mid-1950s that the real power is vested in American monopoly capitalist corporations. There is no doubt, said this U.S. almanac, there is no doubt of Canadian dependence on American capitalist markets and U.S. monopoly capital manipulations. American investment fueled the boom in the Canadian economy after World War II. The branch plants of American companies proliferated. That means they spread all over Canada. In 1973, the USA took 68% of Canadian exports and supplied 71% of the imports, thus giving major control of Canada economically to the United States. Because of forbidding geography and weather, most of Canada is sparsely populated. More than two-thirds of the population live within 100 miles of the U.S. border, and 90% live within 200 miles. The 40% of Canada's land mass lying above the 60th parallel is the most sparsely settled land on Earth after Antarctica, because it is not usable unless it's going to be for minerals. There are 16,000 Eskimos in the Arctic and subarctic regions, once nomadic, that means they roamed and hunted with strong family ties. They are dependent now on trading posts. Their reservations have been broken up like the Indians in USA. Initial contact with white traders brought severe health problems and domination for the Eskimos. In the early 1950s, one-seventh of the Eskimos' population had been destroyed by tuberculosis that they got from the white man. Canada has immense and varied resources. It is a major producer of barley, second among world producers, of oats, second in the world. In wheat, its mineral resources made it the world's premier, the primary producer of both nickel and asbestos. However, this year, this is changing. Some others are moving into the first in wheat. And third in production of gold. Canada's forest reserves have made it the world's leading producer of newsprint. As recently as 1970, the Canadian Career Directory had 3,268 listings of jobs open to men, with 1,244 open to women. Sex-based wages are also common. There is sexism. However, now they face gross unemployment. That was 1970. There's now massive unemployment, massive inflation, not enough housing, the same problems that are plaguing all the capitalist countries. French Canadians in Quebec have felt threatened by assimilation since the British conquest by force of arms 200 years ago. During the Quiet Revolution of the 1960s, Quebec was transformed from a rural, agrarian, strongly traditional society to a modern urbanized state. The Front de Libération of Quebec, the Front for Liberation of Quebec, responded with violent activities called terrorism by the Almanac and urged French Canadians to demand independence. French Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau lashed back with severely repressive police actions, put them under a state of martial law, as any capitalist nation can do with one stroke of its leader, our president. But it was not just a political movement, it was a social revolution caused by industrialization and the impact of mass communication, especially television. This social revolution has led to a transformation in the image of a good life and the good society that most French Canadians hold. Instead of a vision of self-sufficing farm families linked together by parish religious institutions, asking only that the state protect them from outside influences, there has been substituted a basically urban model, one that resembles substantially that held by North Americans from Texas to Toronto. And Quebec, after seeing what progress they had been denied through television, ever since that time, they have been in touch with the world. In that place, television was not harmful, and they have demanded, and are still demanding urgently, their independence. Their last election put in power a governor over Quebec who is a separatist who wants Quebec to become an independent state. Thank you very much. This is all news just for people who are interested in bonuses. Thank you. Much love.
Recent Harris survey of 2,498 adults found that 90% considered terrorism a very serious world problem and 60% view it as a very serious domestic problem. The survey found that the public favors decisive and even drastic measures of torture to deal with terrorists. I would gather 65% of the U.S. public believes it's the right of some kind of a big police force to kill them right there on the spot without trial. By 89% to 5%, Americans would like to see each country develop special teams of commandos to capture terrorists while saving the hostages. By 79% to 11%, a majority would favor cutting off all airline service to and from any country that allows terrorists to use it for its operations or gives refuge to political prisoners. Yeah, that's lovely. Or which gives refuge to terrorists in any way, or assistance to terrorists in any way, or lets them go free. Americans would support 55% to 29%. The special world police force, of course capitalist they would be, of course the participating nations would have to give up some of their own sovereignty in order to allow the force to work effectively. But by 55% to 31%, people would favor a law providing that convicted terrorists be given the death penalty summarily. 51% to 31%, majority also favors countries that refuse to make any concessions to terrorists, even if this means people who are kidnapped or held hostage end up being killed by the terrorists. 51% to 31% of the U.S. population don't believe in negotiating with a terrorist, a revolutionary, even if it means the whole airplane be killed. That shows you how alienated and uninvolved American people are with other people. They can't identify that they might be in an airplane sometime being used as a hostage. So they're voting 51% to 31% that everybody should be killed rather than negotiate with any revolutionary. Americans blame a wide variety of causes for the growth of terrorism. 78% feel that terrorist acts or revolutionary acts receive so much news coverage that this encouraged terrorists. 66% believe that the countries of the world have been too soft on revolutionaries. 70% feel that terrorism has always been the weapon used by radicals who feel the system is totally unjust, and thus they should be treated as harshly as possible. Yeah, 78% have no comprehension of people who are fighting for liberation, and they're opposed to them, believe they can be done with whatever the state decides. How serious a problem do you feel terrorism is in the world, where terrorists kidnap businessmen, hijack planes, and commit other violence? Very serious, only somewhat serious, or hardly serious at all. 90% plus of the United States population said it's very serious. How serious do you think terrorism is here in the United States? Very serious, only somewhat serious, or hardly serious? 90%, very serious. Shit, they had no terrorism at all. You could imagine what a little bit of revolutionary activity in the United States would cause the American people to do. It'd kill people, mob them, and lynch them right in the streets. Active terrorism receives so much coverage in the news that this encourages terrorists, revolutionaries, to further acts of terror. Yes, 88% of the United States population believe that's true. Well, all the questions are the same, right down the line. Terrorism has always been the weapons used by the left, radicals who feel the system is totally unjust and should be punished harshly. Yes, 86% of the American people say yes. Every country should develop special teams of commandos who are experts at capturing terrorists while doing what they can, if necessary, to save lives of hostages. But if not, go ahead and wipe out the terrorists. 80% of the American people believe that should be the case. Wipe out the hostages. All airline services should be cut off to and from any country which allows revolutionaries to use that country as a base of training or operations, or which gives refuge to terrorists or lets them go free. 89% of the American people believe that's right. All airline service should be cut off from such nations, a few nations like Libya, that help give revolutionaries asylum and so forth. They don't believe in the right of asylum, which is a generally held sacred law in this country, the right of asylum. If someone from Venezuela were to flee into Guyana right now because of political persecutions or because of acts against the state, it's a historic precedent in this part of the world that the nation gives them asylum whether they agree with their acts or not, that they give them a new home and a place to live. Not in the United States. That's not the attitude. Special world force should be organized, which would operate any country in the world and which would investigate terrorist groups and have power over all police, sheriff departments, and be able to arrest and put them on trial and execute any member right there to death. Execute them to death. Well, I don't know you execute anybody else any other way. 65% favor that. All those caught committing acts of terror should be convicted and given the death penalty. Yes, 85%. Countries should refuse to make any concessions to terrorists, not even negotiate, pay ransom, or free other terrorists from prisoners or revolutionaries, even if this means all the people who are kidnapped or held hostage end up being killed by the terrorists. Yes, 75% agree that's the case. That's the lovely American people that some of you want to get back. Is it worth to get back with them? Is it worth to be back where they are and take the risk for your McDonald hamburger that you're going to get? To meet one of those sons of bitches that have no conscience, that are walking around like a robot without feeling? I really would think about it if I were you. Washington Post. Federal prosecutors quit in row over FBI. Five Justice Department lawyers, investigative prosecutors, quit an investigation into the alleged illegal FBI activities because Attorney General Griffith Bell refused to move quickly to seek any indictments. A Justice Department spokesman said the lawyers, who comprise a task force that has been gathering evidence for 28 months against a former supervisor of the FBI's New York offices, who had been guilty of all kinds of criminal acts, asked to be relieved of their duties because of the clash with Bell, who refuses to do anything to bring down an indictment against these treacherous criminals that were working as FBI supervisors. Bell yesterday characterized the dispute as a disagreement in principle. He told a luncheon that the task force for some time had sought additional indictments against FBI officials. But he said for now he wants to limit the investigation. Of course he does, because it might cause some of the FBI to talk about the assassinations of our presidents and other things that have been done against the American people. So the Attorney General of the United States is going to limit the investigation to the case involving John Kearney, former supervisor of the FBI New York office. But he is still dragging his feet on that case. Kearney was indicted last April on charges of conspiracy, illegal wiretapping, opening people's mail in connection with alleged surveillance of the radical Weather Underground, also employing force and violence against members of radical groups. The people doing the investigating through there should be further, the people doing the, doing the investigating thought there should be much further investigation and much more indictments brought. And the Attorney General wanted to proceed another way and try the Kearney case, explained Department spokesman Robert Havel. There was a disagreement, Havel said, so the five prosecutors, people in the Justice Department, asked to be relieved, and the Attorney General agreed with that. It's pretty bad when people who've sold out enough to become prosecutors in the federal government, in the Attorney General's Office of the United States, find the fascist course, the neo-reactionary fascist course, so disagreeable that they have to resign from their jobs. They were all white that resigned from their jobs, too. Kearney's trial had been expected to begin in mid-July, but the case has been bogged down in pretrial motions and postponements. Of course, that's the way the government does. Last summer, Kearney's lawyers, Edward Bennett Williams, asked the court to open 25 years of FBI records in an apparent strategy to show that Kearney's actions were in line with general orders and procedures used by all FBI agents and ordered by the FBI director. That is, the FBI director ordered conspiracy, illegal wiretapping, mail opening, violence, surveillance of every type against those who were left in the country. Philip Agee, one of the few CIA agents in the United States who stepped forward to tell the truth, is a man that's haunted by the persecutors all over the world. That's what happens to anyone who takes a stand, as I have taken.